All right, so welcome to the deep dive. We're gonna unpack this really interesting passage from Isaiah,
okay,
chapter 2, verses 1 through 4.
Yeah.
And it's all about a vision of this future peace, a world without war.
Right.
But to get to that peace.
Right.
There are a few different, you know, schools of thought on that.
Yeah, that's right. We're diving into some pretty heavy theological waters today.
Yeah.
You know, we're exploring the interpretations of premillennialists.
Right.
Amillennialists.
Right.
And even postmillennialists.
Oh!
It's like having this time-traveling theological debate right here.
Right here in the studio. And thankfully, we have some really brilliant minds to kind of guide us through this whole thing.
Yeah.
We're going to be drawing from a lecture by Dr. Robert Van Noy, who is a strong advocate for the premillennial view.
Right.
And then also we're going to have insights from some real heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Like J.A. Alexander, Franz Delitzsch, E.J. Young, John Calvin, and Theodore Lech.
Big names.
Huge names. Buckle up, because we're about to go deep.
So let's start with a perspective that might surprise you.
Okay.
The postmillennialists,
okay,
folks like Alexander,
yeah,
and Delitzsch,
okay,
they look at this passage and they see a world where peace and prosperity gradually emerge,
okay,
through the spread of the gospel.
Okay, so they're talking about a world that is transformed not by like some sudden, you know, divine intervention or anything like that,
right,
but by people embracing the message of Christ.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I see that.
And it's fascinating how Alexander interprets that line about the mountain of the Lord's temple being established as chief.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't see a literal mountain there.
Okay.
But rather the church.
Okay.
Becoming this central guiding force in the world.
White
with
church.
Nations flocking to it for wisdom and direction.
So it's like this vision of the church, not as like some isolated institution.
Right.
But as this like beacon of hope and peace that draws people in.
I can see how that would have resonated with people, especially back in Isaiah's time.
Yeah, yeah.
When things were, you know, pretty turbulent.
Especially then.
But what about Delitzsch?
Yeah, well, Delitzsch, he takes that idea of gradual transformation even further.
Okay.
He envisions history culminating in a Sabbath of peace.
Uh-huh.
A time of global harmony.
Okay.
Before the second coming.
Okay.
It's an incredibly optimistic view.
Right. Yeah. Especially when you consider the context of constant warfare and upheaval that marked so much of human history.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's interesting. Okay, so we've got this idea of the gospel slowly changing hearts and minds.
Yeah.
And that ultimately leads to a peaceful world.
Yeah.
It's a pretty compelling picture.
It is.
But I know there are other perspectives out there.
Of course.
What about the amillennial view?
Yeah. Well, the amillennialists, while the postmillennial view is all about that gradual transformation.
Right.
They offer kind of a different take on how this peace unfolds. So thinkers like E.J. Young and John Calvin,
yeah,
they see the latter days mentioned in Isaiah,
right,
not as some distant future,
okay,
but as the present age of the church.
Whoa, hold on.
Yeah.
So they're saying this prophecy is already in motion.
That's their view.
That's definitely a different way of looking at things.
It is. And Young, with his symbolic interpretation,
okay,
emphasizes the spiritual triumph of the church over other ideologies.
Okay.
He argues that as people choose to align themselves with God's will,
mm-hmm,
we see glimpses,
yeah,
of that Isaiah 2.1 to 4 peace,
yeah,
being fulfilled right now.
Okay.
Even amidst all the chaos in the world.
So even though we still see conflict and division,
right,
there are seeds of rest, this lasting peace that are being sown within the hearts of believers.
Absolutely. That's their argument.
Okay.
However, Young is careful to point out that this fulfillment is in principle only.
Okay.
The complete realization of that peace.
Yeah.
The swords literally being beaten into plowshares.
Yeah.
That awaits the second coming.
Okay. So it's like a both hand situation.
Exactly.
We can experience peace in our hearts and in our lives now.
Right.
But that full manifestation of that peace on a global scale, that's still to come.
Yeah, that's the nuance of their perspective.
That's a pretty nuanced perspective.
Yeah.
What about Calvin? How does he view this whole idea of peace in the present age?
Well, Calvin's take echoes Young's in many ways.
Okay.
He emphasizes the power of the gospel,
uh-huh,
to promote peace and reconciliation between individuals.
Yeah.
You know, that ability to bridge divides and heal broken relationships.
Right, right, right.
But he also acknowledges the reality of sin.
Okay.
and its power to disrupt peace, even within the church.
That's true. It's like, even with the best intentions, we can still mess things up sometimes.
Absolutely.
But I'm curious, do these amillennial theologians, do they give any concrete examples of how the spiritual peace actually plays out in the real world? Can we see it in action?
Actually, Leitch gives a pretty striking example from the American Civil War.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He describes soldiers from opposing sides who, despite being locked in this brutal conflict, they found common ground and unity in their shared faith in Christ.
Wow. That's powerful.
It is.
To find that kind of spiritual peace in the middle of such intense division.
Right.
It really highlights the transformative power of faith, doesn't it?
Sure.
But I'm sure our premillennial friend, Dr. Vannoy, might have a slightly different take on all of this.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
He seems to be a bit more, you know, literal in his interpretation of Scripture.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And he critiques both the postmillennial and amillennial views.
Oh, okay.
Arguing that they don't fully account for the literal language of Isaiah 2.1 to 4.
Uh-huh.
He points to phrases like, in the last days.
Right.
And the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest mountain.
Okay.
And sees those as clear indicators of a future literal kingdom. Ruled by Christ from Jerusalem.
Right.
A kingdom where war will cease entirely.
So this is where we get into that classic debate about the, you know, literal versus figurative interpretation in the Bible.
Right.
Yeah. Always a tricky territory to navigate.
It is. And this debate is especially relevant when we look at this passage from Isaiah.
Uh-huh.
Take that phrase, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as chief among the mountains.
Right.
What does that actually mean?
Yeah. What does that actually mean?
Is it about the church's prominence in the world?
Right.
Is it a literal geological shift?
Whoa, okay.
Or maybe something else entirely?
Yeah.
Different theologians offer a whole variety of interpretations.
That one phrase alone opens up a whole can of worms.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it?
It really does.
It really highlights the complexities of biblical interpretation, for sure.
Absolutely.
And speaking of complexity, I'm curious how Vannoy addresses that tricky bit in Revelation 20.
Yeah.
Where it talks about a final battle.
Oh, right. At the end of the millennium.
Right.
That kind of seems to contradict this whole idea of lasting peace, doesn't it?
It does seem like a bit of a theological puzzle, right? But Vannoy has a fascinating way of reconciling those seemingly conflicting passages.
Okay.
He delves into the linguistic nuances of that Hebrew phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Neither shall they learn war anymore in Isaiah 2.4.
Right.
Suggesting that it points more towards a cessation of war.
Okay.
During the millennial reign, rather than its complete and utter eradication from human history.
So it's like a pause button on war, not a delete button.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, even after hearing all of these different perspectives, my head is spinning a bit.
Understandable.
It's amazing how the same passage can be read in such dramatically different ways, depending on your theological lens.
It really is.
It really is.
And I think that speaks to the richness and depth of Scripture itself.
Right.
You know, it invites us to engage with it on multiple levels, to wrestle with its complexities, to allow it to challenge our assumptions.
Absolutely. So we've heard from the postmillennialists who see a gradual gospel-driven transformation leading to peace.
Right.
We've explored the amillennial perspective, which emphasizes the spiritual reign of Christ and the seeds of peace being sown even now.
Yeah.
And we've delved into Dr. Vannoy's premillennial argument for a literal future kingdom of peace.
Right.
Ruled by Christ from Jerusalem.
Yeah.
It's a lot to take in.
It is a lot.
And honestly, it raises more questions than answers.
For sure.
But before we get too overwhelmed, I think it's important to step back for a moment.
Okay.
And ask ourselves.
Yeah. What does all of this tell us about God's ultimate desire for peace?
Right.
Regardless of the timeline or the specific details of how it unfolds.
Yeah.
That's the real heart of the matter, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And that's what we'll be exploring in part two.
Awesome.
Of our deep dive. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Welcome back to our exploration of Isaiah 2.1 to 4.
Where we're wrestling with these different interpretations of a future without war, a future filled with peace.
And in the last part, you heard about the postmillennial, amillennial, and premillennial viewpoints.
Plus, we got a little taste of that whole literal versus figurative debate, which honestly could be a deep dive all on its own.
They really could.
Yeah.
But today, I think it's time we shifted our focus to the bigger picture.
Okay.
It's easy to get lost in the theological weeds.
Right.
But what does this passage actually mean for us here and now?
Yeah.
What's the so what factor?
Right. Like, okay, we've heard all these different interpretations.
Right.
But how do they actually connect to our lives?
Yeah.
How does this vision of a world where swords are transformed into tools for good, how does that inspire us to act, to make a difference in the world today?
I think that's the key question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a question that each of these theological perspectives can actually help us answer.
Okay.
Take the postmillennial view, for instance. It emphasizes the role of the gospel in gradually bringing about a more peaceable world.
Mm.
It suggests that as more people embrace Christ's teachings of love and reconciliation,
yeah,
society will naturally move towards greater harmony.
It's like that idea of a ripple effect, right?
Right.
Like you toss a pebble into a pond and the ripples spread outwards.
Exactly.
The more people who choose peace, the wider that impact spreads.
Exactly. And that postmillennial perspective reminds us that even small acts of kindness, of forgiveness, of choosing understanding over judgment, they can have a real impact on the world around us.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that.
Start small.
Okay, so that's the postmillennial view, but what about the amillennial perspective?
Yeah.
How does that inform our approach to peacemaking?
Well, if the postmillennial view focuses on outward transformation, the amillennial perspective zeroes in on the inner work, the spiritual foundation of peace.
Right.
Remember how we talked about how thinkers like Young and Calvin see the latter days as the present age of the church?
Yeah, I remember thinking that was a pretty bold claim.
It is.
Yeah.
And it challenges us to see the potential for peacemaking not as some distant future goal, but as something we can actively cultivate in our own hearts and minds right here, right now.
So it's about embodying that peace internally, even when the world around us feels chaotic and divided.
Exactly. And that's where practices like forgiveness, reconciliation, and actively seeking unity with others, even those who may hold different views, become so important.
It's like building these little pockets of peace, these sanctuaries where love and understanding can flourish, even amidst the storms of conflict that rage around us. And maybe, just maybe, those pockets of peace can start to expand to influence the larger world in ways we can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thought.
But what about the premillennial view?
Right.
Where does that fit into all of this?
Well, even though the premillennial view focuses on a future literal kingdom of peace established by Christ, it doesn't let us off the hook in the meantime.
Right.
In fact, I think it offers a powerful reminder that even if we believe God will ultimately bring about peace, we still have a responsibility to work towards that goal in the here and now.
It's like we're not just passively waiting for peace to magically appear.
Right.
We're called to be active participants in building that peace, brick by brick, act by act, choice by choice.
Precisely. And that call to action applies regardless of our theological beliefs.
Right.
Whether you're a postmillennialist, an amillennialist, or a premillennialist.
Right.
There's this common thread running through all these interpretations.
Yeah.
It's like Isaiah is saying, okay, here's a glimpse of the future God desires. Now, what are you going to do about it?
That's a powerful challenge, but it also feels a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
I mean, where do we even start?
Right.
How do we translate this grand vision of peace into tangible actions in our everyday lives?
I think it starts with recognizing that peacemaking isn't just about grand gestures or political campaigns.
Right.
It's about the small everyday choices we make, the way we interact with the people around us.
So being peacemakers in our own families, our workplaces, our communities.
Exactly. It's about choosing kind words over harsh ones, actively listening to someone we disagree with, seeking common ground instead of focusing on division.
Yeah.
It's about extending grace and forgiveness even when it's hard.
And those are all things we can do regardless of our religious beliefs or political affiliations.
Absolutely.
It's about living out the values of peace and compassion in every interaction we have.
You got it.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing that building a more peaceful world is a collective effort.
Right.
It requires collaboration, understanding, and a willingness to step outside our own echo chambers and engage with people who see the world differently than we do.
It's like we're all pieces of this giant peace puzzle, and each one of us has a unique role to play in putting it all together.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
It's true.
But how do we keep that vision of peace alive when the world around us feels so full of conflict and division?
Right.
How do we avoid getting discouraged or overwhelmed by the sheer scale of the challenges we face?
It's so easy to get bogged down.
It is.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a question we can explore in part 3 of our deep dive.
I think that's a great place to pick up next time.
Welcome back to the deep dive,
where we've been unpacking Isaiah 2:1-4 and its vision of a world transformed by peace.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground, different theological interpretations,
right?
The call to action, that whole literal versus figurative debate.
Right.
And now it feels like we're standing at the foot of this mountain.
A mountain of peace, so to speak. Mm. And you might be wondering, how do we even begin to climb it?
Yeah.
Especially when the world feels so full of obstacles, so much conflict and division.
Right. It's easy to feel overwhelmed, like our individual efforts are just a tiny drop in the ocean.
Right.
How can we possibly make a difference in the face of such enormous challenges?
It's a valid question, but I think it's important to remember that even the smallest act of peacemaking can have a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. You know, like that saying, be the change you want to see in the world.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
It's like those videos you see where one person starts dancing in a park and suddenly the whole crowd joins in.
Yeah.
One person's courage can spark a movement.
Exactly. In the same way, when we choose to be peacemakers in our own lives, it can inspire others to do the same. Huh? We might not see the immediate impact, but those ripples of peace can spread further than we can imagine.
So where do we start? What are some practical ways we can become those peace dancers in our everyday lives?
Well, I think it all begins with cultivating inner peace.
Okay.
Remember how we talked about peace being an internal state of being?
Yeah.
Not just the absence of external conflict?
Right.
That's the foundation.
Right. So things like meditation, mindfulness, spending time in nature.
Absolutely.
Those can help us find that inner stillness.
Exactly. They help us create a sense of calm amidst the chaos, a space where we can connect with our deeper selves and access that wellspring of peace within.
Right.
And when we're grounded in that inner peace, we're less likely to react impulsively or get swept up in negativity.
It's like building up our own internal peace reserves so we can draw on them when things get tough.
Precisely. And from that place of inner stability, we can start extending peace outwards into our relationships and interactions.
Okay.
It might be choosing kind words over harsh ones, actively listening to someone we disagree with, offering a helping hand, or simply acknowledging someone's struggles.
Or maybe even apologizing when we've made a mistake, or forgiving someone who has hurt us.
Those are powerful acts of peacemaking.
Yeah.
And they don't require grand gestures or political campaigns.
Right.
They're things we can practice every single day in our interactions with family, friends, colleagues, even strangers.
So it's about making peace a conscious choice, a way of life, rather than just a reaction to conflict.
Exactly. And over time, those small intentional acts can start to add up.
Mm-hmm.
They create a more peaceful and harmonious environment around us, influencing the people we interact with, and maybe even inspiring them to become peacemakers themselves.
It's like we're weaving a tapestry of peace.
Yeah.
Thread by thread, interaction by interaction.
I love that.
And even though we might not see the whole picture right away,
right,
each thread we add contributes to the beauty and strength of the final creation.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is, we don't have to do it alone.
Right.
We're part of a community, a global movement of people who are committed to building a more peaceful world.
Yeah.
There are countless organizations, initiatives, and individuals working tirelessly to address conflict, promote understanding, and create positive change.
So it's about finding our place in that larger movement.
Yeah.
Contributing our unique skills and passions to the collective effort.
Exactly. It might involve volunteering our time, donating to a cause we believe in, speaking out against injustice, or simply educating ourselves about the root causes of conflict. There are so many ways to get involved and make a difference.
And it's encouraging to remember that throughout history, there have always been people who refused to give up on the dream of peace.
Right.
People who stood up for what they believed in, who bridged divides, who sparked movements, even in the face of seemingly insurmountable challenges.
Absolutely. Their courage and commitment remind us that change is possible, that peace is not some utopian dream,
right,
but a real possibility, a future worth striving for.
Yeah.
And as we wrap up this deep dive, I think Isaiah 2:1-4 offers us a powerful source of hope and inspiration.
Yeah, it reminds us that even amidst the chaos and brokenness of our world,
right,
a future filled with peace is not only possible, but it's something God deeply desires for all of humanity.
Absolutely.
And it's a future that we can start building right now, one peaceful interaction at a time.
One interaction at a time.
So as we go back out into the world, I hope we carry that vision of peace with us in our hearts and in our actions.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Isaiah 2:1-4.
It's been a pleasure.
May we all be instruments of peace, spreading hope and understanding wherever we go.
Until next time, keep seeking peace and keep diving deep.